of droppings I left at your front door, that was nothing.
You didn't have to set it on fire first.
He called the crap poop. Well, let's not relive it then, I guess. We can move on.
Was fun to have in the studio, though.
Yes. Well, Jim, we had a bit of a debate last week, Chris Cannon and I. And we debated about AJ Derby. I don't know what I've heard more, that B.A. is going to be the man or that A.J. Derby is going to be a big contributor at tight end. I actually believe in A.J. Derby as a tight end contributor because he knows the offense like a quarterback should, and he is built better to be a tight end than he is a quarterback.
Should we ever take Hunter Henry off the field?
No, never ever. But I'm just saying, we've talked to him before about it. He said, I have four, even five tight end sets. Yeah, so the thing is, you can't have too many, and we just talked about a guy. Well, okay, I mean, it's excessive, obviously, but I'm just saying. I mean, the bottom line is.
It wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Hey, with the wide receiver core they've got, I have no problem with it. But my point is, there is a place for Derby, and I think Derby can be a contributor. And we had a debate the other day, Chris Kane and I. I said he's going to have 20 catches this year, and he said no way.
How many did Hunter Henry have last year?
That's a good question, Pat.
I was going to check that out.
Well, he'll have 55 this year, and then Derby will have 20.
Hunter Henry should get thrown to at least. I mean, if he's not thrown to at least five times a game, that's 60 passes, then look, I have to call into question the coordination.
Jim, I'm telling you, that's my next step. I got a couple things about that. First of all, if A.J. Derby's the answer at backup quarterback, I have to question who's developing quarterbacks up
there. Well, here's what he said. He was asked, this is Bielema, was asked, if you had to play tomorrow. I'm not even sure if he was really asked that. He just said, if we had to play tomorrow, and this is like a week ago, who would be the starting quarterback? Who would be the backup quarterback? AJ Derby would be the backup quarterback.
Right.
That's last week. And was it said for your motivation for the true backups? You know, it seems so. It seems like yesterday there was no mention of AJ Derby quarterback, but at tight end. But there was a mention of Allen's little brother. You know,
yeah.
I can't remember his last name anymore.
Austin
Allen. So, I mean, obviously there were probably a couple of things there. I understand from my sources that Austin was not too pleased to hear that, one. But secondly, what was real interesting was, like, I'm sure you see the message boards. I mean, there was like a semi-meltdown.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, not A.J. Derby again. And poor guy.
That was
me. It's not his fault. It's not his fault that he's the most mature backup with some ability to take the snap up there. I mean, he at least is physically ready to step in there. I still don't know if TV or Austin Allen are ready to take a snap against Auburn's defense if they had to.
Well, but
I hope Brandon can.
Jim, I have no problem if Peavy's not ready, but the fact that if Austin Allen, who is a highly recruited, highly touted quarterback, is not ready, I have to put that on the coaching staff. You're not preparing quarterbacks if he's not ready to go as a backup at this point. I'm sorry. Or you recruited poorly.
Well, maybe that's the answer.
Well, he was a he was more highly thought of out of high school than his brother was.
He had to be, well, I think BA was three-star, right?
Yes.
We discussed this.
And Austin was a four, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, regardless, I have to question, and I have some questions about the offensive coordination. I like Jim Chaney, but I had some questions about some things they did offensively. I know you did too, Jim, last year. So I think this is a show up or shut up type of year. And I look, Pittman's making more money than any offensive line coach in America. His resume is second to none. I have no problem with him. So he was part of that package that came over from Tennessee. Chaney sort of got a pass. It's like, well, he's a good coach, and they had a pretty good offense over there. I'm like, okay, and I like Chaney, and I root for Chaney. He's got a great personality, and, you know, his resume is not bad. I mean, I think they did okay considering what they had at Tennessee. But you better show me some, because there were a lot of things last year. I was like, what are you doing? I mean, I think a lot of fans are going, what are you doing?
Well, Chaney only scored 7 points against Willie Robinson's defense in 2011, I guess.
Well, I mean, look, I'm trying not to be too specific or small-minded about it, and I don't know everything that goes into it. I know he understands.
Are you saying I'm being small-minded?
No. I'm just saying I don't want to be too specific or too unfair.
I'm just saying.
My point is they need to make significant strides in the coordination and the effectiveness of the offense this year.
Every changeover, which Arkansas did, and I can go back and cites every example of it. Anytime Arkansas made a major changeover in offense, it takes a good half a season to most of the season to have an effect. I mean, you can go back and talk to Sterner in 97 when they brought in Kay Stevenson from the NFL, you know, at Broyles behest, even though Danny Ford, you know, didn't believe in that kind of offense. They put in a pro-style offense, but it took, kind of like last year, it took until probably the last three games to show some improvement. That was without a running back of any note. And it was kind of similar, even though that team did win one of the games. That team beat Mississippi State out of its last three games. I saw a real similarity to last year. It took, you know, almost three quarters of the season before you started seeing a, you know, and this was even with Brandon being hurt too, but I mean, to throw that in. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, the offense was a little stagnant. Now, what does bother me, what to watch for this year, and I don't get it, but watch how many times Chaney calls the same play, even if it might be in a slightly different formation, two times in a row. And he did that in the red-white game, there was a pass intercepted. It was the exact same call as the previous play. It was late in the first half of the red-white game. Distinctly, I remember this happening in an Alabama game when they finally had a big play passed downfield to Hunter Henry, and in a slightly different formation, they ran the same route with Henry down the field. But Alabama, you're not going to get them twice in a row with the same deal. I mean, they had a safety. The next time he intercepted the ball. I mean, I think it's real interesting. I mean, those are just two of, I could probably look back and find a few more examples in my notes, but I'd watch for something like that as far as if you have any questions about the coordination or the game planning.
Yeah. I am curious to see how much improved. And again, I mean, they're all I'm hearing about is how great, you know, Derby's been a tight end, how great Brandon Allen's going to be this year and how much better he's going to be, and you won't believe it, and how much great strides he's made between summer and fall camp. And that's good, and I hope that's the case. We were just talking about how good does he have to be for Arkansas to win enough games to get to a bowl. And my take is, I think, you know, again, he may have to help them win a game here or there, but I think in general he just needs to not make the mistakes that were so costly last year. I mean, if we can keep the pick sixes to zero. Yeah, no pick sixes. That's my goal.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to not score with your possession and give the other team a defensive touchdown. I mean, a 14-point swing, how much does that cost them at Florida, for that matter? When Arkansas really, I mean, if you think about that game, Arkansas played a heck of a football game up until about the middle of the second quarter when that happened. And, you know, it changed the whole game. And once they're down 17-7 and they're getting blitzed every other play, if not every play, you know, when Allen was on the run and it was just, you know, Torch City. I mean, you know, they played well at times. Well, you got to stretch that out for 60 minutes and not have the giveaways. I'd also like to think that this year we'll finally see some defensive turnovers, some forced turnovers, some strips, you know, up that number significantly. I think that would help a whole lot. Yeah, many takeaways Missouri had last year.
A lot.
And 36. Mm. Arkansas had 14.
That's a lot. We were talking about touchdown to interception ratio too. Brandon Allen last year, and again, I don't want to pile on the kid because I know he wasn't healthy, and I believe that.
Yeah.
13-10. 13-10 last year. Under 50% passing, which in this era.
Oh, yeah, touchdowns to interceptions.
Yeah, 13-10.
Right.
1,500 yards, actually better than I would have expected. And under 50%, which in this era is completely unacceptable. So he's got to see significant strides. And if he's healthy, he's, you know, I'm hoping he'll be healthy and stay healthy. And
here's the way I look at him. I thought he was solidly the difference in the game, just the way he led the team against what turned out to be a pretty good Louisiana Lafayette team to start the season. I thought He answered the questions. Everybody had questions about him. Okay, the next week, his top receiver, Hunter Henry, being that, I mean, threw to him six times in the Lafayette game. Against Samford, he was playing hurt. He already hurt, you know, his knee. He had knee swelling, and he didn't have his top receiver, and you saw his other receivers kind of let him down, and the passing game suffered against Samford. Then he got hurt against Southern Mississippi. Okay, so that's that section. Then you got that section with the separated shoulder. Well, his passing percentage, you know, definitely dropped big time after that. Samford wasn't good either. And then you look at the last three games of the year. Well, he's at 58% in those last three games. I mean, I could almost live with 58 to 60%.
Oh, I'd be thrilled.
He was 48% for the season, but if you look at his passing, you know, in those last three games,
yeah,
he was beginning. I mean, the offense was coming around. Everybody's beginning to understand that you finally had guys like Hatcher understanding that if they wanted to play anymore, they couldn't drop the ball. Did you notice the effort Bielema went to yesterday to talk about Keon Hatcher,
yeah,
you know, catching the ball great? And how, I mean, that was a big point of emphasis. I mean, there's nothing they could do about those seniors that were dropping the ball. They demoted one of them, and I think he worked his way back into the lineup the last game of the season. But, I mean, Hatcher's the guy that also, he has to help his quarterback out. He can't bat balls up in the air like you saw in that first half of the spring games. Got to catch passes.
Jim Harris of Sporting Live Arkansas joining us in the Zone on the Stickies Rock and Roll Chicken Check Hotline. Cordog has a question. Go ahead.
Hey, Jim. I wanted to ask you, because you kind of hit on a subject that I had was looking at, and I didn't really have time to research it all the way through, but I'm kind of concerned just a little bit about, you know, with Chaney, wasn't he an offensive lineman as a player?
Yeah. Doesn't look like he was a quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is, the teams that I've looked at in the SEC, your offensive coordinator was, and I know every team coaching staff is structured different. Sometimes you have co-coordinators and quarterbacks coach, and sometimes you have combo coaches. But somewhere in that, either the passing game coordinator or quarterbacks coach, you have a former quarterback that is coaching your quarterback, and we don't have that. I mean, and so that concerns me a little bit. If you look at all the other SEC teams, and I think, you know, pretty much that's kind of a trend nationwide, I think.
Yeah, Arkansas has a former quarterback coach and tight end.
Tight end, yeah.
of course, I kind of wonder if they wouldn't let Lonnie some, you know, work with the quarterbacks a little bit. I thought he was, I mean, he was a Clint Sterner and that level, but he certainly achieved a lot leading Arkansas to a SEC West championship, and he's a great coach. I think he's a heck of a coach and has a heck of a future. As far as Chaney, I think they lean a lot on saying, you know, that, you know, he coached Drew Brees and some of those guys, and obviously there was some success there.
Well, was he the quarterback's coach at Purdue, though?
No, I think he was the line coach.
Right.
And coordinator.
Yeah, but that's what I'm
saying. I don't know who was the specific quarterback coach at Purdue. I should know that at that time.
I just feel like that, you know, when it comes down to, and like you said with Lonnie, I mean, you don't necessarily have to have a quarterback that was a world beater as a player, but to have somebody that at least knows, you know, to watch, you know, mechanic-wise and all the nuances that go into being a quarterback, I just think that that's something that's important. And you're right. I think that there probably is some input if there's some situations where, you know, Lonnie sees something. I'm sure there is, you know, some talk there. So I agree.
And there's,
it concerns me because we don't have a quarterback's coach.
Well, there's something to be said for the fact that the previous two head coaches, not including John L. Smith, Trino and Nutt were former college quarterbacks.
Yep.
I mean, they were quarterbacks, and their quarterback was an extension of them on the field. Coach Bielema was a defensive lineman, which is an interesting perspective there. In fact, I'm trying to think if Arkansas's had a defensive coach, a defensive play, you know, mentality coach, up there since Otis Douglas, who was not very successful.
Right.
All right. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate you, man.
Thanks, Corn Dog.
Jim, was Otis Mitchell, who was the coach before Broyles, was a quarterback at Oklahoma. Broyles was a quarterback at Georgia Tech. Holtz was an offensive-minded guy. I think he was a defensive back, but he knew offense. I mean, you look at Kenny Hatfield, was a defensive back, but he was also a running back and knew offense. And Danny Ford was an offensive lineman. And Jack Crow didn't play college football, but was an offensive-minded person. Houston Nutt, Bobby Petrino, those are all that whole lineage from the, you know, the 50s, starting with Bowden White, those were offensive guys. This is the first guy that's been the head coach at Arkansas in my lifetime that I can remember that was solely a defensive guy as coming up in college.
So what about Otis Douglas? Did you two get along?
You know, Otis was a good guy. He was a lot like Phelan. He was a real nice guy. I just wasn't suited for the job.
What year was that?
50, 51, 52.
So, yeah. So you two were in your prime at the same time, probably ran the streets.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was I started college then. It was a great time. I didn't get out till 80. It took me 30 years to graduate.
I don't know if you guys saw the story. It's legendary. Let me get Everett in here. I've got a couple other sidebars here. Go ahead, Everett.
Hey, good afternoon. Good morning, afternoon, guys.
Hey.
How are you?
I had to weigh in on this quarterback situation because it's almost like a thorn in my side, man. I'm optimistic about the team. It's like looking at a big juicy pizza with a rope crawling across it when you say Brandon Allen is the starting quarterback, man. It just messes the whole thing up, man. I'm sorry, man. Brandon Allen is not the guy, man. I don't know why he's making excuses about he was hurt and got out of time. If you even go back to the fact that he hurt himself jumping in the end zone. That in itself is pathetic. But to me, you have not even evaluated a quarterback. You have not tackled a quarterback yet. You have not tackled a quarterback since, from what I'm hearing, the last football game. And, man, that's not football. That's flag football. Are we going out? Are we trying out for flag football? Or are we trying to play rough football in the SEC? Because what they're doing, that's flag football. And I just don't know how you can take a race TV that ran 1,000-plus yards and have to as a quarterback and not give him the opportunity to show those skills and base everything on passing. Passing, is, like I say, is only probably a little bit more than half of the job as far as I'm concerned in this age of quarterback. And Brandon is not the guy. I'm sorry. He's just not the guy. I hope he proves me wrong, but I'm pretty sure that he is not the guy.
What would you consider if he played the whole season? What would you consider a good year for him?
A good year for him as far as passing goes, if he can average 200-plus yards, and here's the kicker, he has to get at least 30 to 40 yards on his feet to extend those plays, pick up 5 or 6 yards here or there. At least
every game?
Every game he's going to have to pick up at least 30 yards. I would say at least 30 yards would be the magic number that he's going to have to hit in order for us to stay in the football game. If we depend solely on his arm, we're probably not going to win 6 games. And I would almost...
I agree with you on that. I think he's definitely going to have to take the load off the running backs and his downfield passing by running. Probably more times than he probably wants to, but I think that'll be a key. That's always a key in college football. I don't think a drop back passer at Arkansas, I mean, they got away with it with Mallett, but when you look at Tyler Wilson, he ran the ball a few times, but you just about have to in college football.
Well, he totaled 99 yards last year gained. So
yeah.
He's going
yeah,
to
and he got sacked
Well, you have to tell me how good he's going to.
Like 12 times.
Yeah, you got to tell me how good he's going to. Although that was like best in the conference, you got to tell me how good he's going to throw it before I worry about whether or not he's going to run it. If he's throwing it effectively enough, I'm not going to worry about it. But Everett, I appreciate the call. Thank you.
All right,
Jim. Let's move on to some other things. And this is a weird story I saw this morning, Pat. I don't know if you saw this or not. Jameis Winston purchased a $10 million disability and loss of value insurance policy, and Florida State is footing part of the bill. That would seem to me to be a bit of an odd benefit for a high-profile player on your team. I don't know about the NCAA. It says, NCAA's website states a student assistant fund shall be used to assist student-athletes in meeting financial needs that arise in conjunction with the participation, It's just weird. I've never heard of that being done before.
It's been done a couple times. I'm not positive, so I don't want to say this because I don't remember exactly, but I know that, you know, McFadden had some kind of plan. It was a Lloyd's London plan or something, and I don't think he paid the whole deal.
I thought Anthony Lucas did as well. Did he?
May have.
I'm going to ask
you. Sure, Anthony would tell us if he did. He was a fifth year, and I mean, he was a fifth year senior when he was wrapping up. You know, McFadden, of course, was a junior. I've heard of some other examples of this. That's why I knew that it wasn't a, you know, anything to, you know, think, hey, they're breaking any, you know, rules. It does seem like an odd benefit, but
well, it does.
They let.
Admittedly, regardless of how good I am for Florida State, I'm not the defending Heisman Trophy winner, so it's a little bit unique. But if I'm a high profile, say, wide receiver, I'm a high-profile left tackle, I'm a high-profile safety, and they won't do this for me? Or are they going to do this for me? How much money is FSU willing to shell out?
Yeah, no kidding.
I think it's an odd precedent. That's an odd precedent.
In that article, it talks about Texas A&M recently paid for the policy of offensive lineman Cedric
Ogbuhi. I know who you're talking about. I can't pronounce his name either, but yeah, I've heard that as well. Yeah, I mean, I would think that Arkansas, with its high caliber offensive, you know, those 4 and 5 star guys that they signed, I mean, I would think they'd want to have some kind of, you know, policy against injury.
Well, and like, here's the other part of that article talks about how because Texas A&M paid for the offensive lineman and his insurance policy, it helped convince him to not enter the 2014 NFL draft and to come back and play for Texas A&M that year, which is an interesting twist
on that. Now, that sounds like an inducement almost, you know? But that's almost like, you know, I didn't give you a car. I didn't buy you a car to stay one more year, but I've assured your financial well-being if you were to get hurt.
It's interesting we don't hear about that more in basketball. Don't leave after your freshman year. We can pay some kind of an insurance policy if you come back.
After what happened with Paul George Friday night, I would think that a lot of people would, and of course the Kevin Ware injury at Louisville, I would think a whole lot of these basketball players would be thinking about that.
We saw it 2 years ago at Nerlens Noel with Kentucky, right? Ultimately, he slipped in the draft. He's probably number one guy if he didn't get injured.
I wonder if Tiger Woods took out an injury insurance policy this year.
I doubt he's worried about it because he's one of those guys that has so much money in the bank already, it doesn't matter to him. If I'm Jameis Winston,
or how about an insurance policy to get him a few more majors that he's probably not going to get now?
How many more? It's hard because
I still wouldn't bet against him.
I will. I think, Rory's only 25. And if he averaged one a year or less than one a year, even he could get to where Tiger is.
And there's more guys coming. I mean, there's going to be less opportunity for Tiger. I mean, he's never going to probably be in the position to run away from things like he did, unless he keeps going back to courses he's real familiar with and confident on when and if he does get healthy again. But it's kind of a. For the first time ever, maybe, that I've been watching this guy, I felt a lot of, sympathy, I guess, for him.
From what I've been reading, his stubbornness is so high that he even tries to cut, and this probably what he did this time, came back. He's so stubborn trying to prove that he is strong and athletic and powerful and all that he probably came back too soon, which you can't from a back injury, any injury really, but certainly a back injury, and that probably is the reason why he's dealing with it again.
Well, look at him swinging at full bore, 100% on everything. I thought Faldo the other day, hasn't really criticized him ever, not like, Brandel Shambly does, but, Faldo said, I mean, you come back with just a few swings from a back injury? Aren't you really, you know, going to hit it 80%? You're not going. I mean, especially when he goes full bore with those tough shots, like the one he said he probably tweaked the back on. Mm-hmm. You know, where he had to have 1 foot.
Oh, in the sand trap! I know, Tiger. Seriously, that looks like. I don't know. I'll be in there in the Pine Bluff tournament a couple times this weekend.
Overswinging all weekend with your good back.
Like
yeah,
that,
but with a good back. With a good back.
Is that tournament this weekend?
It is.
Jim, yeah.
Do you have any spots left?
It's a 50-year anniversary now. They're sold out, big guy, but you need to come down and hang out.
Can I just, come down? I mean, I played in it a lot of times.
How can you not? The party of Friday night is worth the trip to the Bluff for sure. Hey, Jim, I got one other thing for you before we let you go. We're already over here, but...
Okay.
The most hated Major League Baseball teams by state, continent, and territory. Did you see this?
Yeah.
Okay. The interesting thing, internationally, the most hated team is the Yankees in every single country, every single continent overall, except for Australia. And they hate the Dodgers there. I have no idea why. Okay, but here's the more important thing.
Okay. There, remember? Because they played in Australia this March.
Oh, okay.
The Dodgers did?
Yeah, they went down to Australia during spring.
Well, it looks like that didn't help.
Didn't work out.
It didn't work in their favor to get any fans.
The interesting thing to me was in every single country, in every single state, there were, you had all kinds of teams. You had the Rangers are the most hated team in Texas, which is funny to me. The Red Sox are the most hated team in Florida, Louisiana, and Missouri, I guess, because Cardinals fans. But
Tampa
there's only
Bay.
One state in the union that hates the Cubs the most. Can you guess which one it is?
It's got to be Illinois. It's got to be Illinois. The
now, Illinois hates. Illinois hates the Cardinals the most.
Yeah, that's I would figure.
So
and
you
and
don't actually hate
right
yourselves. Iowa, Iowa must hate. The Chicago Cubs. The pain.
No, they're the AAA affiliate. They hate the Cardinals.
But I know, but the pain the Cubs Cardinals. Have inflicted
Arkansas.
On you is my point.
Arkansas is the only state. Arkansas.
No!
Out of the 50 states, the only state that hates the Cubs the most is Arkansas.
I guess a lot of Cardinals fans.
Yeah.
Mostly.
But there's not as many Cardinal fans as there are, you know, St. Louis,
Missouri?
I wouldn't think.
Missouri?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a little odd to me that Missouri.
Yeah, I was surprised Missouri didn't hate Cubs more.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's funny to me.
Who does Missouri hate more?
They hate the Red Sox because of Well, you've made it.
Hey.
Caused them some headaches over the last few years.
Yeah, we did take 2 World Series from them.
So that's understandable. But the entire Southeast.
That's funny.
This was interesting. Georgia and who else is over there? We got Alabama. They hate the Washington Nationals.
I guess it's just the division.
Did they understand what the question was? Possibly education is very low on the list in Alabama.
Yeah, I didn't get that list as well as I got the football.
Yeah.
Hey, I think Arkansas hates the Denver
Let me
Broncos.
See.
Yeah, no, I know. Tommy was
Arkansas and Missouri.
Yeah.
Hates the Denver Broncos.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Tommy was very bothered by that being a Broncos fan.
So let me get this. California hates the Dodgers.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, it's not surprising that I would expect every state to hate their chief rival or the team that's in their state because I'm sure there are plenty of people that live in Oakland that hate the Raiders.
Well, I would think that you, as a Cubs fan, would hate the Cubs because of the pain that they've put you through since you were a little boy.
No, that's
since you were born.
No, that's like me hating my kids because they cause me angst. No.
And they take all your money. I hate, you know, when the Red Sox lose, who do I.
You hate
I
them.
I hate them.
Yeah.
But the way
I
love them.
I project their pain on my pain onto other people. I don't want to hate the team that hurts me the most. I want to blame other people for beating up on my Cubs.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I've been hating the Cardinals here lately, the way they've been, you know.
You got the Major League Saves leader.
Why
like
the Nationals? I don't get it.
I don't either. I don't get that. Anyway, I do hate Milwaukee, Jim. So we can both root against Milwaukee. I don't like Milwaukee or their fat loser fans that I encountered when I was in Chicago, the last time the Brewers played there when I was there. There's
the
that.
Sports writers are big homers too.
And you know we're gonna have Torrey Hunter on the show tomorrow, Jim.
What time?
Is
he going to be down in Pine Bluff?
11:30. No.
Oh, y'all aren't in Pine Bluff tomorrow. I'm sorry.
No, we're there Friday, but he couldn't do it Friday, so we're going to have him on early, and then we're going to replay it on Friday. But
are you going to be in Pine Bluff?
Yes, we are. Doing the show. Why don't you come down and hang out? 50-year anniversary of the four ball. You need to come down and do a little story.
Is that Wyoming that hates the Cardinals so much? Is that Montana?
That's Wyoming.
Why does Wyoming hate the St. Louis Cardinals so much.
I don't know that.
Get a grip, Wyoming.
I guess all those Cowboys are laying down with their boyfriends, and they're saying, man, I hate the Cardinals.
Jim, you're a Pine Bluff native. Yeah. I can't believe you're not playing or writing some story. Why don't you write a story?
I grew up on that golf course, both ways that it was built. It was rebuilt in 1967. It was redesigned by the guy who also designed Pleasant Valley.
Oh, okay.
His name was Joe Finger. He had a lot less land to work with.
Did he point out the positives and negatives?
It's odd.
Joe Finger.
I've actually gotten the finger at Pine Bluff Country Club a few times.
It's a funny thing, Joe Finger, he just wants to point everything out. What's wrong with this guy?
It's a smaller course, it's landlocked, there's no real growth opportunities to lengthen that thing out, but it's a classic
His real name is Joe Smith, but they started calling him Joe Finger because they always be like, look over there!
Look at
Change that bunker! Fill in that pond!
You know,
I want you to completely change the undulations of that green! You see where my finger is put? Right there! That green!
You know, Joe, there's three stands back over there at you.
Put all the stands at 13 so the people can heckle Pat Bradley when he tees off.
I do want to make sure that I...
Pat wants to get to 13 during prime time, Jim, so he can be properly
what
heckled.
What time do y'all tee off? That's what I need to know.
1 o'clock.
I need to know when to be there to heckle you guys.
Here's the good news. Okay, so we stay up late Thursday for Stag Night. The show starts at 10. We sober up at 12:15, and then we tee off at 1. It's going to be fun.
Well, if somebody backs out, tell the guys at Pine Bluff if they need it.
All right.
The last second pinch hitter.
Jim, just be there, babe. You never know.
I've got my game...
Look, I'm a fragile old man. I'm telling you, I'm falling apart.
Down.
What if I go down in a heap? I need you to jump in and drag my boy Haney around.
Don't forget to bring your cool Nike shades.
Your old three putt club buddy, Kevin Haney.
Yeah, so he can carry you anyway.
I'm trying to get
he can play down there with one against two.
Oh, bro, if I didn't show up, it would make no difference on our ending score. I promise you, I'm just there for moral support.
Who's your partner, Bradley?
Playing with a local musician, Raj Arnold, who the only way I would play with him is if he played a song in between holes with his guitar.
He's bringing his guitar on the course. He's the only man I know who has successfully swam the Arkansas River and not drowned.
Yes, this is true. There and back, yeah. He did.
Yeah, he's my idol. And he plays his guitar barefoot. I hope he golfs that way as well, like Jim McMahon. Anyway, Jim, we look forward to seeing you down there, man. Just show up. You never know. There's going to be somebody's going to fall out.
Hey, what are the chances I get Raj to actually tee off with his guitar? Actually use
that
the guitar.
That sounds like something Daly would do.
That's exactly right. You know, he is playing in the PGA Championship this week. Jim, why don't you go on a limb and pick him? Or not.
No.
Okay.
All right, there's Jim. Only one guy to pick.
I think that's right. I'm definitely on board with that idea. And you know what? I think I'm going to root for the Europeans in the Ryder Cup. I know that's un-American. There's no Americans that are playing that I even care about.
Not even Ricky.
I like Ricky, but the only American
that could win this weekend may be Ricky Fowler. So.
Okay, John Daly. It's going to be the greatest story in golf history. Mark it down.
If he makes the cut, that'll be a win.
Okay, good point, Jim. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I hope to see you Friday.
Okay, I'll see you.
All right, see you. 11:42. Way behind in the zone.